Good day, everybody. My name is Captain Jeff Monroe. I'm the Director of Education Programs at the International Association of Maritime Port Executives, and I welcome you today to today's Port Perspectives. And we're very pleased to have Commissioner Carl Wetzel from the Federal Maritime Commission we'll have a chance to talk to. And welcome, Commissioner. Very nice to have you with us today.
Jeff, it's always nice to talk. I remember, I think we first met when you were and Maine is the port director in Portland. So it's been a while, and it's great to talk to you.
Yeah, I remember that. We were trying to keep ourselves from being in front of a hearing of the Federal Maritime Commission. So fortunately, it worked out well for us. Commissioner, tell us a little bit about what's going on at the FMC. What are the priorities? What's happening right now that you guys have been heavily focused on? And I know it's obviously the Ocean Shipping Reform Act and also supply chain issues, but tell us a little bit about what's been going on.
Sure. I'll go back a little further, just how I got there. And I'm a maritime lawyer by trade and actually worked in Capitol Hill, where we first met as the counsel, both on the House and Senate side for merchant marine and transportation issues. And so spent a long time working on policies there, including the policies of the Federal Maritime Commission. In fact, the first hearing I ever worked on was the reauthorization of the Federal Maritime Commission in 1990. And now I am here as a commissioner. So it's come full circle. I also worked on the legislation that under which I now operate, the Ocean Shipping Reform Act of 1998. And so now I'm back in public policy again after a stint in the private sector and operating at the Federal Maritime Commission under new authorities that were provided in the aftermath of the pandemic. And I think on one hand, Jeff, it has been incredible to note how little the world knew about the importance of shipping and what it provides to our national economies. On the other hand, it took the events of the pandemic really to provide this knowledge and this knowledge of what our dependence is on ocean shipping, and the impacts resulted in new legislation governing the Federal Maritime Commission to empower us to protect the public with, I would say, greater vigilance. And the statute really didn't change our organic structure on how we regulate. We're pretty deregulationist in terms of a general philosophy, but it did clearly indicate you need to spend more on enforcement. You need to protect the public with greater vigilance. And it was passed because inflation was the result of congestion in the maritime transportation industry. Prices increased, but really it's that slowdown in cargo that cannot be countenanced in the United States. So if you're a home builder, probably 60, 70, 80% of the supplies that you use are at some point or in some way going to be materialized through foreign trade. And we have a just-in-time mentality with respect to how we provide supplies that's made our country completely dependent on ocean shipping. And so the good is people recognize that. The bad is we're dependent on a pretty fragile, complex infrastructure that can take some beatings and have issues. And so the pandemic was one. We're seeing the same issues with respect to the capacity reductions of the Panama Canal and elimination of the Suez Canal as a shipping route for container shipping. So we have a lot going on at the FMC, both in the aftermath of requirements to update our laws and to take action to do a number of rulemakings, and also dealing with what I think will be a challenging summer and fall in ocean shipping issues again, maybe not to the extent that we had in the pandemic, but one that will be very, very interesting.
Well, it certainly has been different. I mean, we've gone from just in time to just in case. The drop off in volumes, because there was just so much already in stock here, you know, has softened the pressure on the supply chain system and everything. And all the ports, you know, obviously around the world have seen a decrease in the amount of volumes coming through. And the nice thing was, up until January, we saw the rates, the container freight index, for example, was in and around $1,500, $1,600. Now it's, you know, up to 4,000, though it's been slipping a little bit, you know, and getting a little bit softer and everything as the shipping industry has adapted and everything. But I think overall, the biggest change that we've all watched is what happened with OSRA 22 and the ultimate parallel. I think that, first of all, you came up with the FMC regulations, and then, of course, Congress backed that up with a parallel set of legislation that basically gave you a great deal of authority and also allowed you now to shift the focus to a certain extent to the care of the shippers, because you've made the whole experience with shippers a lot easier when they have complaints and everything. And the nice thing about it is that you've actually been enforcing it, and shippers have benefited from that.
You know, it's a balance, and the balance has shifted here in the United States to be more pro shipper from a regulatory perspective. I remember when I first started out, two of the four top carriers in the ocean shipping industry were U.S. Companies, Sealand and American President Lines. They were both sold, you know, at the turn of the millennium. So it did affect what the policies are and how they're going to be applied. I would say that during the debate on the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, it was clear that the carriers had ceded a lot of the political field to shipper interests that would not have occurred even when I worked on Capitol Hill, because of the presence of such a pretty strong U.S. flag fleet. And so now, you know, this is an issue as a nation we need to wrestle with. But I am concerned about the lack of strong U.S. flag presence in international shipping. But the end result was you have to embrace the perspective of the people that you regulate to a greater extent. And so some of that has come to the exclusion of concern of carrier activities.
And I see that the stronger regulation of service agreements by the FMC, which I think has been very good, and I think protecting shippers and everything is a critical factor, you know, with all of this. And I think, as you said, there are going to be a lot of changes even coming up. You know, we think that things have settled down a little bit, but you alluded to the fact that, you know, as we get into the summer and the fall, that you see things in the industry changing dramatically again. And what's your sense of that?
Yeah, you know, you said, well, things have gone down. The last 2 years in shipping were like a baseball team that wins over 105 baseball games, and then they say, well, we're down this year, but you're looking at probably the two highest years in the history of ocean shipping. So volumes are not bad, although there was some reductions in pricing, a lot of that was due to the fact that shippers did overbuy during the pandemic. Just in case became more prevalent, so there's a lot of backlog of cargo that was soft because of that overbuying. But I will tell you, during the congestion, there was $8 billion in detention and demurrage fee assessments during the pandemic. That's just a stunning amount of financial penalties for either not picking up your cargo at the terminal or failing to return equipment. And so now we're working through, you know, literally hundreds of cases at the FMC. We went from having one administrative law judge to three since I've been there. And You mentioned enforcement. We have still, we're working to try to increase our field investigators, but we have primarily six or seven investigators for the entire United States, people on the ground out in the port cities, looking to see if there's some malpractice or abuses that are going on. We regulate about $1.5 trillion of cargo movements, the value of the commodity coming in on international trade, and about $4.5 trillion of economic activity surrounding the movement of that cargo. So about $6 to $7 trillion. So we have one investigator for every $1 trillion of economic activity at the FMC. My counsel did a calculation a while back, and by way of comparison, the SEC has 150 investigators for every $1 trillion of economic activity regulated by that agency. So we had to make adjustments to upgrade our system of enforcement to be more protective. We've been working with the ocean carriers. I would say it's a pretty cooperative relationship. They have come to the table in good faith and are taking actions to remedy, you know, some of these issues related to abuses, essentially.
It seemed that for the longest time that their approach, not only some of the carriers, not all of them, but some of the carriers and also some of the ports have been more focused on punitive actions than anything else. You know, well, I'm sorry you can't get your cargo out, but, you know, you owe us the demurrage, you know. And of course, that rippled through the entire system. You know, we're solving, hopefully, some of the issues associated with our ports. You know, a lot of great investment that's coming in right now. Everybody's expanding, you know, and everybody's got some sort of project going along. It was quite interesting to see as I talked to some of the other port executives and everything about how much they're investing in port operations and anticipation that it's going to come back. But, you know, there are still rail issues that need to be solved and warehousing issues that need to be solved and trucking issues that need to be solved. And also, you know, we find that it's fascinating that there's just a strong lack of professionals or young men and women who want to come into the industry. You know, even with a limited number of merchant ships under U.S. flag, you know, having some troubles getting people out there. And they're certainly having a lot of trouble getting people into logistics and transport industries and stuff. It seems that truck drivers would rather work for Prime than they'd rather work for long haul trucking and stuff. And, you know, it's the nature of the beast, certainly. And, you know, economics drives everything. But one day, I've always held the belief that somewhere along the line, we're going to have a comprehensive policy in the United States, right, that really takes into account all aspects of the supply chain. And I know that you guys have been working on it quite a bit, you know, and trying to fix things up and obviously, you know, trying to shift and make it a better system for certainly for the shippers.
Yeah, no, I have been working on something which is near and dear to my heart. And that it's the Maritime Transportation Data Initiative. You know, when I reviewed the circumstances of the pandemic, it was really clear that there wasn't a real transparent system for providing information. Even though the information existed, it wasn't always being shared by to the right people. It wasn't always provided to the right people within a particular operation so that they could provide that information. It lagged. It was not real useful. You know, if you go into an airport, you know where to park your car because there's information about how many parking spaces are open. You know that there's going to be a shuttle every 5 to 10 minutes. It says long and short-term shuttle. You know what gate to go to because you're directed to that gate. It gives you an ETA of when your aircraft will land. When you get on the aircraft, you'll get an ETA on when you're going to land, and the reverse situation of information will pull true at the port of disembarkation. The maritime industry does not do that. They do not provide transparent information to all parties. Some parties get adequate information, but it's sort of ad hoc. And so if you're a someone from Maine and you're exporting maple syrup, you may show up at the port in anticipation of having a ship that was actually canceled a month before then, and you arrive at the terminal without adequate guidance on what to do or how to address this. I think the public is owed real-time in-transit visibility information about when vessels will arrive. I think we need to harmonize how to describe the system of cargo movement through U.S. terminals, and it has to be intermodal. It has to, because if your railroad is slow in picking up cargo in the port of L.A. Long Beach, where 60% of your cargo goes onto rail, that means that your port or terminal is going to be slow, and there's going to be problems getting cargo in and out of the complex itself. So we do need to do better. You're right. It is about intermodal movement. A lot of the things are just residual sloppy business practice that needs to be updated, and people need to do better. It's simply too important of a commodity to the nation's economy not to get it right. And so we're looking at putting out new. I made some recommendations on public transportation requirements for intermodal shipping to cover everything in our jurisdiction, which is everything that goes under a through bill of lading contract. So all aspects, and it would harmonize in-transit visibility, estimated arrivals of shipping and scheduling of shipping coming into and out of the United States, and harmonize the system of handling at terminals and set up information sources that can be widely assessed by the public to protect them and to give them information so if something's going wrong that they can make adjustments.
Yeah, and I could see where it would also enhance our supply chain security systems, you know, so we'd have a much better system of tracking what's going on. I know that some folks in the industry have always been cautious about sharing their private data with public resources. I did have a conversation with MARAD one time, and I says, well, you know, why don't you guys gather more of this information? Well, you know, we're very sensitive about this, and you know, it's private data, and it's, you know, and so it's I recognize that, but you know, to the benefit of a system that really can depend much more on technology, this seems like it's a great initiative, I really hope that they embrace it and it rolls out.
You know, ships are pretty transparent. You can see where they are. Yeah. You know when they're going. You can get them online and see exactly where they are. So there are certain areas that need to be kept transparent for competitive purposes. And I think you can do all of that and keep that system transparent to the extent that everyone can see where it is and where it's going. And that's apparent right now, you know. So those other cargo items, so the recommendations that we make ensure that cargo information is going to be kept confidential. And so we don't need that. We don't need that information, but we do need to know when a terminal is going to be open or closed or what their policy is with respect to, you know, empty returns and information about railroad services or schedules for ocean shipping lines. Mm-hmm. With the Panama Canal at 50%, and the Suez Canal closed essentially to container business, there's going to be adjustments on a daily basis on what the schedule's going to be going forward. But no one can find out what that is, even though the shipping lines know it. And that's just not right. You know, we need to do better there.
Yeah, certainly would be helpful, particularly how many people depend on the raw materials for production cycles and everything else like that. And so I do hope that this does come available to folks in the long run. You know, it sort of comes in. Here's the shipping segment. Here's the rail segment. Here's the truck segment, and never the twain shall meet. You know, and that's really puts things at a disadvantage. So, Commissioner, you've had a long and interesting, obviously, career, you know, in the federal government, you know, now here at the FMC, and everything. And as you know, there are a lot of young people who take our programs. I've taught about 2,600 altogether, if I figure that out, betwixt and between, you know, all over the world. And it's been very interesting with all of this. And we have a great new crop of faculty who eventually will take on the burden after, you know, I decide to go fishing. But if I ever decide to go fishing.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I find it's interesting is that it's not just a men's industry anymore like it was many years ago. We see about 30% of the people who take the programs are women. We have a lot of Coast Guard personnel who have taken the program, who are looking for career advice and looking for something after they get out of the Coast Guard. And they're very good people, and other facets of the military as well. You know, what advice could you give young people who are coming into the industry, who are, you know, low or mid-level managers, who are aspiring to be someday like the Beth Rooneys of the world, you know, or the Griff Lynches of the world, or the John Nasses of the world, you know, what is the best advice you think that you could give them that they should focus on in planning out what I certainly was for me a great career, even though I started out on ships? You know, it was a great career coming into this industry, and I've enjoyed every minute of it, which is probably why I'm like gum on a shoe. You can't seem to get rid of me.
Well, some people say that's wisdom and intelligence and guile. So let's keep it at that and say, as opposed to gum on the shoe. So
what do you think?
A couple of things that I would say. First of all, it is tough to get people engaged in transportation because, frankly, we can do this from home right now. We're doing it right now, talking from home, and there's a lot of jobs that will provide that comfort. But I remember seeing recently that out of the top 30 schools that provide corporate leadership, I think it was Maine Maritime Academy and Kings Point, U.S. Merchant Marine Academy, were in the top 30 in placing people in leadership positions, corporate positions. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity right away. You know, there's a lot of room for growth faster in the maritime or affiliated transportation industries, in my view. So you can get to a point of leadership right away. But you don't get that same chance in other industries. So there is growth, faster growth, and opportunity to exercise decisional jurisdiction earlier in your career if you're involved in transportation. So, I mean, that should be something that I remember. I as a young attorney, I went on Capitol Hill, and all of a sudden, even as a young attorney, I was dealing with CEOs and senior vice presidents, and they were making policy arguments about what their positions were vis-a-vis legislation. And so, you know, that was something that was probably more important than just the comfort of working at home to me. That's my opportunity to gain knowledge, to be a stronger person and a competitive person in the industry that I'm going to be working in. So there's an opportunity here because there aren't as many players. And so the record will show that maritime transportation folks that are there will move up faster into issues where they can make decision-making and policy decisions. So that would be my first pitch, you know, why this is a good industry to be involved in. The second is focus on being able to make decisions as opposed to make money per se. You know, everyone can probably make money if they're traders or something like this, but it's really exciting to have a job where you can make decisions, and those decisions are your decisions, and they are decisions that affect the lives of many. You know, if you're a merchant seaman and you're navigating on a vessel, those decisions are critical decisions, far more than other areas that you might get a job. So there's some really exciting things about the ability to make decisions and have them be important decisions that I think are also there available to this industry. And you mentioned the Coast Guard and some of our military services. And I remember for years talking to the Coast Guard. And yes, the Coast Guard is a regulator of marine safety, for instance. But they're increasingly being requested to interface with the maritime industry. You know, at ports, the captain of the port knows what's happening with respect to his port. And they can understand the maritime industry. So take advantage of these opportunities to understand the broader issues facing the industry and to utilize them when you're looking for a job. So yes, there are some challenges. I think these jobs come up periodically that allow you to work from home and be comfortable. But I'd rather have a job that allowed me to take the initiative to make decisions, to be working on international issues that are affecting the mass of our population, or that give you sort of critical authority over how something is done that affects people more than yourself. And it's interesting. You know, I never talk to people in the maritime industry that don't like what they're doing. And that's sort of, and I'm sure you've had that thing. They all like their job. It's nice to like your job.
It is. It's always fabulous. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. Young people, when they get out of college, the thought is, well, okay, I've got my education down and I got my degree on the wall, right? Now I'm going to go learn a job somewhere and, you know, and then they get into it and stuff. And I always encourage people, I say, you know, ongoing education is critical. I mean, you certainly, you know, went back to school, the graduate school and all the rest of it. And, you know, even our training courses that we offer, I think are always very helpful. I also hope someday that the maritime colleges, not only our federal academy, but all our state colleges, will embrace a segment of port training. Because as you know, when you're a sailor, you know, you go to sea for a number of years, you get to be captain, you know, and next thing you know, you're married, you got a couple of kids, and you realize how much you're missing ashore. And we make those transition. And ex-military and merchant mariners, I think, make the best port people that I've run into. You know, guys like, as I say, like Griff Lynch and Ed McCarthy and Beth Rooney and stuff like that, who all come from maritime colleges and background and stuff like that. They've done a phenomenal job. So there's something about that operational segment that really, you know, really tunes you up to be able to face the challenges of the port industry, which are continual, which are ongoing, and of course, in many cases, involve billions of dollars. And I have to agree with you that to be able to make those decisions, and not on a computer, but to make those decisions in the offices where you can actually have an impact on people's lives, I think is very positive.
No, I agree completely. It's an undersold industry. There's lots of opportunity. I'm glad to see more females and more diverse workplace. And I think we have to work as an industry to continue to make the pitch, to take advantage of harnessing. You're right. Intermodalism is huge, and frankly, the maritime schools and my council went through your program and came back and told me how valuable that education was to what he does and working with me. But the ability to understand that system of movement is probably more prevalent in the maritime industrial school base, the Merchant Marine Academy and Mass Maritime and Maine Maritime and all of California, Texas A&M. And so they are doing pretty well and getting their people placed in employment and high positions. And so if I had my druthers, you would have the Merchant Marine Academy would have a advanced degree in intermodalism, and we would be using the King's Point to do more research on this and foster a sense of expertise in the whole area. And I include, as you do, railroads and trucking and all of these sort of issues that are integral to the supply chain management of our nation as part of the whole chain of transportation custody that's necessary to have expertise in. So yes, I agree completely. It's going to be a growth industry. It's not going to slow down. It always goes up. You know, there may be a year it goes 1 or 2%, but then there's going to be a couple of years where it goes 4 or 5%. During the pandemic, Jeff, our imports increased over close to 30% in 2 years.
Mm.
And it shows you what's essential. You know, the aviation system and the transit system, they went home and were at 90% capacity reductions. And the maritime industry was still moving cargo. So you can talk on a cell phone or you can do computer communications. But most people at the end of the day want to use that to get some goods or services or to produce something or to manufacture something or to do even service-related industries. So you have to move pretty much everything in the world at some point. And so you have to have expertise in it. It's probably not sexy, but it's sure important.
Well, so, I always thought it was sexy, so.
Right. Well, there's a few of us out there that do. And I actually, one thing that's been interesting is when I first started, there was the Merchant Marine Academies and the Maritime Academies and some small programs. But now I'm getting calls from every university in the United States that has a supply chain management program.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, where do they come from? I'm trying to make contact with them and talk to them about some of the things that I'm confronting from a policy perspective to reach out. But you know, this is a big change.
It is. We're very lucky that we have six academic partners. You know, Maine and Mass Maritime Academy, State University of New York Maritime College, Texas Southern, University of Memphis, and the Australian Maritime University, which is fascinating. But there is going to be a need for a whole new generation. And I'm very pleased to see that the graduate programs at some of our academic programs actually teach portions of our program in the context of their master's degrees and everything. And that's been wonderful. So I suspect that the future looks bright. Inflation is sort of steady. Interest rates will be coming down. People are going to be out there buying where, you know, our debt levels are dropping and stuff like that. So where we were, maybe not so bad as it was during COVID, but certainly I think where we were, I think we're coming back slowly but surely. I think by the end of the year, we'll be in much better shape economically, and you'll see the buying sprees pick up again.
You know, buying was not horrible. I will tell you that. Some people, because what you saw is you saw a reduction of 115 wins to maybe now to 95 in a baseball season, but it was still not bad. So ports were down a little bit, but if you compare it to 2019, the last year that was regular before the pandemic, we're all pretty much up. We're sort of on the same trajectory on upward growth from that. You really had 2 years that were anomalies in that they drove growth of 20 to 30% in containerized shipping. So I think we are going to have some challenge with the Suez and the Panama Canal dislocations. The supply chain is so connected. So if you stop, for instance, if the Suez Canal closes, that means that vessels that used to go into the Mediterranean, where it wasn't a huge market, will transfer out of that Mediterranean service. And places like India, where they would stop by en route to Asian trade, will suffer some. So these things and getting containers back and forth and positioned for their next shipment is a challenge. And so there will be challenges. I talked to all of the ocean carrier lines, and they told me they're trying to make adjustments on the fly to address these. So we have better capacity. We have more ships online, but there'll be some challenges. And so that's where people will make their money this year, is how to overcome the challenges of the threat to navigation. You know, it's not since the days of the Barbary pirates have we actually had to confront political challenges to shipping to this extent that we have now.
Well, we have bigger guns now, which is a good thing.
It is. But we also have bigger ships. So, and they have bigger guns too. So it's an ongoing challenge that I don't know if there's an easy answer to.
Well, time will tell. Commissioner, I cannot thank you enough for your time this afternoon. It was great chatting with you. And I know everybody who follows our Port Perspectives and Doc Talk will be very interested in hearing all of this, and appreciate your insights, not only into your career and what the FMC is doing, but, you know, what your thoughts are for our young people who are coming into the industry and stuff like that. And I know that as long as we have good people like yourself who provide good mentorship, that, you know, the future looks hopeful for all of our people.
Well, I thank you for your service and education to what is a really critical industry, and appreciate, like I said, my counsel just went to Savannah and really learned a lot. So, and it is critical to get more knowledge out in what I believe is a vastly underrated, important aspect of essential need in our nation, and that's the movement of our intermodal cargo. I had the CEOs of companies coming, and I remember this talking to Commissioner Dye, one of my fellow colleagues and friends on the commission. She said she was talking to a logistics manager for a major company, and he said prior to the pandemic, I would be able to see my CEO maybe once or twice a year. And he goes, now I see him twice a week. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it does show what's important. And so anyways, good luck in your continued educational efforts. And I hope the podcast works out.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to dropping in and saying hi next time I'm in Washington, D.C.
You're always invited. So
thank you, sir.